Hey everybody, Aficionados Chris here. Today I have a very special guest. A lot of you have probably heard of him on YouTube. He's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, might be right under Jeremy Johns at this point, as one of the biggest YouTube movie critics right now. A lot of you have requested to either have him on one of my shows or have him appear in a video, but here he is in the flesh. We have Chris Stuckman. How are you doing today, sir?
Hey, man, I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be able to discuss movies and YouTube and things like that with you. I appreciate the request.
Oh, please stop flattering me. it's good to have you. A lot of people, like I said, a lot of people have requested you be involved in the channel. I don't know if it's like the fact that we both have the name Chris. Maybe people wanted us to start some Nickelodeon show, The Adventures of Chris and Chris.
Oh man, speaking of Nickelodeon, I'm collecting the old Nickelodeon shows I grew up with on DVD. So I'm watching through Rocko's Modern Life, and I love it so much.
Oh, great show. I was actually I used to talk to the creator of the show a lot. He's actually a fan of mine.
Jim Murray?
Joe Murray. Yeah,
Joe Murray. That's awesome.
He's a really nice guy.
That's cool. I would love to talk to him.
Before I was like, he's got a Facebook and a blog nowadays that he keeps track of. For anyone listening who likes Rocko, check him out. He posts a lot of great things.
I have a hard time believing that if you watched Rocko's Modern Life that you wouldn't like it. I don't understand how you could not like that show. It's so funny, and it's actually better as an adult, I've found, because I grew up as a kid and I was like, oh, this is cool. I didn't get any of the in jokes, but now when I watch it and they go to Chokey's Chicken and they go to a jackhammer convention, and it's called Jack All You Want. And I was like, oh my God, this show's amazing.
My dad used to tell a story, because I used to watch it when I was like, that was like 94, so I was about 3 or 4 years old when it came out. And my dad said that he used to call his friends at work to tell them to watch the show because of the jokes that were in it. And specifically, he said, they're going to a restaurant called Chokey Chicken.
Yeah,
and apparently, it took Nickelodeon executives 3 seasons to get the joke, because the last season they changed it to Chewy Chicken. Many people don't notice that, but
yeah, it's true. And like, there's an episode where Rocko's trying to get a job, and it just cuts to him on a phone, and he's saying things like, oh baby, I want you. And you realize that he's a phone sex operator. And it's just like, this was on Nickelodeon, and I liked it when I was a kid, and I had no idea what he was doing, but I love it now.
I think it's a testament to a good show when you end up liking it more as you get older.
Definitely.
Like, I mean, we're nerds, so we're going to like it anyway, but the fact that there's something in there that's far more enjoyable as you get older, like, you know, the adult jokes that they kind of snuck in there, you know, a lot of shows on Nickelodeon did that. Even Cartoon Network did that. I remember a joke in Johnny Bravo that's so horribly inappropriate that I can't even believe it made it to airwaves. It was like this gag where there was that character played by the now famous Mae Whitman, who was like this little girl. She was like 8 or something, and she calls up Johnny because she always pestered him, and she says, "Hi, Johnny, want to play?" And Johnny just says, "Call back in 7 years or something when you're coming."
That's amazing.
How did they get away with that?
I have no idea, because nowadays everything is so politically correct with kids' shows. It's like, can we show him punch this guy that hard? You know, like everything's so carefully edited nowadays. But when I was a kid, it was like I was actually I tweeted the other day. I found this Goosebumps book called The Horror at Camp Jelly Jam, and the front of it is like this guy with these beady eyes. He's got this gigantic smile, and it just looks like it's absolutely terrifying. And it was made for 12-year-olds, and he just looks like a rapist ready to happen. And it's just on the cover of a children's book. And I was like, I miss when this kind of stuff was more applicable to kids in the 90s. And now that everything is so carefully crafted,
it's just like, I mean, I noticed because I remember when a lot of these new Cartoon Network shows were coming out, like Adventure Time and Regular Show, is that I remember catching some of them, and they were saying, it's no big deal nowadays, but like, they were saying things like crap and suck, and I was thinking, when I was a kid, you couldn't even say that in a kid's cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Hey Arnold said it a couple times, but like, even then, it got people a little like iffy about that, because I guess back then they were kind of considered curse words, but now they seem just part of common speech.
Yeah, definitely.
I think Canada has something to do with that. But
and it's funny, speaking of that, I also realized that almost at least half of the shows I loved as a kid were from Canada, like Are You Afraid of the Dark, Goosebumps, Tons of those shows are from Canada, and I started to realize as I watched it the way the accents were, because I have a few Canadian friends, and as I got older I realized these are Canadian shows, and a lot of Nickelodeon shows started in Canada, believe it or not.
Well, believe it or not, like, there's some cartoons that were made in Canada, and they actually had to, because they were supposed to be broadcast in America, they would actually have the actors pronounce words at the way Americans do, like Ed, Edd n Eddy comes to mind, where they actually had to, like, for example, everyone knows, you know, the sorry and sorry in Canada. Yeah. They actually had to write out in scripts sorry so that they say it like that when it goes over to America.
I have a very good one of my best friends is Canadian, so I've heard all the things about about out house pond. Like, we say pond, and to them that's what they hear is pond, because they say like pond very, very carefully. And so, yeah, the
they
Canadian
read it to some Bostonians if they heard panned.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Oh god, yes, Canadian podcast. But I think we haven't gotten to the first question. This is how much
I'm sorry.
Oh no, keep it going. That makes the podcast interesting.
I can talk about Nickelodeon shows for years.
Well, especially when you have like a dork like me who watched it around the same time. I was just, you know, slightly younger. But
yeah,
I think
definitely.
The first thing, the biggest thing, because like I mentioned, for people who probably been living on a rock and don't know who you are, you do movie reviews, but also the occasional video game review, anime review. You just do reviews in general. But specifically, I think a lot of people want to know, because people like to hear these kind of, sort of like, if it were like done by Nolan, it'd be a dark origin story. How did you get inspired to start doing movie reviews, let alone on YouTube? Because some people wouldn't even consider that an outlet.
Right. It's funny because, and still not an outlet, no. I mean, I've tried to, it's becoming more respected now because a lot of other places that are already considered respected are moving to YouTube, like IGN and, you know, the Los Angeles Times has started to make YouTube videos and stuff like that. And so it's slowly but surely gaining a little more traction in regards to the way. See, my honest thing is, like, a lot of I do get that question, you know, how did you do this, or what did you become of it? When I was like in my early 20s, I just thought it would be fun. You know, I mean, that's really it. I thought it would be a fun thing for me to do. I used to work for a school system. I worked on school buses, supervising children that were handicapped. And in my free time, I would see one movie a week, usually the Thursday midnight showing. There'd be one theater nearby me that would do Thursday midnight showings. So Thursdays at midnight, I would go to see at least one movie that was out that weekend. And then I would stay up all night editing it and then go to work at like 6 a.m. on the school bus to pick up the kids. And so that Thursday nights were and Friday mornings were the hardest because I didn't get any sleep. And it was just there's something I was passionate about. I think when I was 14 years old is when I really started to get passionate about filmmaking. And my parents were nice enough to get me a very reasonably priced video camera that, you know, was not very good quality, but to me at 14, it was the greatest thing ever given to me. And my friends and I got really into making short films. And throughout our teenage years, we made probably a couple hundred of, and I'm counting everything. I mean, like even our 1 to 2 minute random shorts, I'm counting as well. And we made tons and tons of stuff together. And throughout that time, I got really into writing little 2-sentence reviews on movies.yahoo.com. And I would write, you know, every movie I'd see, I'd give it a letter grade and write a little paragraph review, you know. And I got, and my friend and I started, like, you know, healthily competing with each other, just total kind competition, you know, where we would be like, did you get, how many reviews did you write today? How many reviews did you write today? And we both kind of were trying to build our own little profile on Yahoo Movies, which is kind of pathetic, I guess, but it was fun. We loved it. And then I started a website that I wrote reviews for. It was on Yahoo GeoCities, because back in the day, GeoCities was a free server on Yahoo that you could make websites on. You only got a very small amount of bandwidth, but it was free. And it was called A Critic's Opinion. And I would write more in-depth reviews that were still just, I was like 16, you know, I mean, they weren't that great. But for a 16-year-old, it was something fun for me to do in my free time. And I got really into that. that site's no longer up because Yahoo GeoCities shut down its free service. And so they gave everyone, like, I don't know, a certain amount of time to start paying to use it. And I was like, I don't want to pay money. I was like 17, you know. And then I just continued to see as many movies as I could for a long time. And I remember I was sitting down with my dad, and I think we were playing a card game or something. And I remember asking him, like, what do you think it'd be kind of cool if I did movie reviews for fun, like video reviews? And he was like, well, we got you the camera, and so why not try it out? And so I think at that time I had a newer camera because I was already, I think I was about 21 then. So I had bought my own camera at that point. But and I started doing the video reviews, and I was getting, you know, 5 views, and 4 of them were from me. So, and it was like, I would review as many things as I wanted to. I got really into the idea of building a catalog. I really liked the idea of having like an archive of things that were covered. And I still really like that idea. Like whenever I get the opportunity now to review like a classic movie, like this year, I'm going to do that a lot. That's one of my things I want to do this year, is when MI5 comes out in July, I want to do like a series of Tom Cruise reviews. When the new Bond movie comes out, I want to do Bond reviews. When the new Star Wars comes out, I'm going to do the Star Wars movies I haven't covered. And when the new M. Night Shyamalan movie comes out later, I'm going to do some of his earlier films. And when Spielberg's new film comes out, I want to do some of his films, because I want to build like an archive where if anyone goes to my search function on my channel and they search a review, I can maybe have it. Like, I want to have as much as I can. And that's what I liked forever from the beginning. And I'm sorry if I'm talking too much, but
no, the long answers are the best ones.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. I don't want to. Chris Stuckman talks too much. Chris Stuckman. Ooh. Like, you know, I don't want any of those comments for you. But yeah, I want to have like an archive of videos. And that was my whole thing from the beginning, was I just wanted to have fun. I worked a normal job still for like 2.5 more years. Mm-hmm. With the school system. And I even sold newspapers for a while before I was able to quit my job, because I got partnered with the Full Screen Network, and I've been able to start supporting myself and my wife. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And I honestly, to this day, still have no idea how it even happened. It's just, and I still don't view myself as a success story person. I'm just a guy who really likes movies, and I love to talk about them. And I see comments from time to time that say I'm pretentious, or I'm full of myself, or whatever. And I think it's really easy to look at anyone really who has a large number of followers or a lot of people like him or her and think, well, he's a dick, you know. But I just do what I do, and I'm happy that people enjoy watching. That's really all I can say.
Well, I mean, you're certainly not pretentious enough to do this shitty show, so if they
well, I think, look, man,
should this solidify it, like, hey, he's not pretentious. He's doing a fish on Chris's shit.
I gotta be completely honest with you. And this isn't an insult. This is a compliment. Okay. I have no idea what type of views you get. Not a clue. I know about how many subs you have, but I don't search like vidstats.com to see what kind of views you get.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That would seem like sort of like James Bondy hacker, like, like,
yeah, that's
completely,
that's
like, wow,
that's
what,
Ethan,
what is
that's
his
Ethan
viewership
Hunt.
Like?
Right. And what I mean by that is, like, you've always been nice to me. You've always been a nice guy. You've always been very pleasant. So why the hell not would I do your podcast? I mean, it's nothing.
I'm glad
I don't have a subscriber, like, what's the word? I don't have a subscriber.
Bias,
yeah, I don't have a subscriber ceiling. Like, if he's above this, I'll do it. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter to me.
If anything, like, people are gonna start leaving comments like, Chris, you're only interviewing Stuckman because he's bigger than you. Like, somebody's gonna be angry. Like, it's gonna be one or the other. Like, Chris, you're only doing this for your image, or Chris, you're only doing this for your image.
No one can simply sit back and enjoy a nice conversation. That's asking too much.
Well, I mean, yeah, I've always, like, the one I did with my old buddy John, who's also a friend of yours, the Flick Pick, because I've known John since way before he took off. I think he was only at, like, 300 subs when I knew him, and I was only, like, at least for the movie reviews, I was only just starting out. He still is a great guy. Wonderful, funny.
You mean, like, back when he looked like he was 15 years old?
Yeah, he was, like, a scrawny, like, yeah. he looked younger than he was, which I think is kind of a compliment.
No, I say that because him and I have this in-joke with each other that, like, in 2 years, he aged 10 years. Like, because in 2 years, he started working out, yeah. and he got so buff, but it actually makes him look, like, more mature. And I don't mean old in a bad way. He just looks more like a man now.
Yeah, yeah.
And when
he's
you go back and
more,
watch...
like, toned and everything. He's more yeah. refined and shit.
Yeah. When you go back and watch, like, one of his first videos, he looks like a teenager. It's like, whoa! You just, like,
well, I mean,
boom.
Since he was kind of, like, semi-camera shy, he looked very awkward in his first few videos. Like,
I
always joke about it, because our joke is that I always say, I love that I knew you as the guy who was talking about hanging himself in a video about Toy Story 3.
Yeah, yeah. He's pretty dark, or as he would say, a little bit dark, a little bit mystical.
A lot of that. So he's fun. We spoke for like an hour because when I did the podcast, I hadn't talked to him at least like for a good long time. And his, you know, he's just very busy nowadays. Kind of like you, because you know, scheduling this one was a bit of a thing. But you're here.
Yeah, my family was visiting last weekend. I apologize. And it's funny because even tonight I'm going to go see Rear Window is showing in theaters nationwide tonight.
Ooh.
Rear Window tonight and tomorrow, and I'm taking my mom and my wife to see that tonight. So that's not till later, though.
I mean that's a great film. My favorite Hitchcock film to date is Rope.
Rope is really underrated.
Rope. I feel because everyone's talking about Birdman, which was also a great film, but like there's a lot of films out there that did what Birdman did just as well and kind of predated. Like Rope was. At least, as my memory serves, one of the earliest uses of extremely long takes in film, because the whole thing was based on a play. So they're mm-hmm. trying to basically emulate that feel of a play performance.
Definitely.
It's a great film. Now, you actually took one of my questions, so good for you.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry.
No. Quit apologizing here. You're making for good entertainment.
Okay.
The big thing is, because you're on That Guy with the Glasses right now. I guess I should say Channel Awesome, not because they've since changed the name. And you do a series on your channel, a scripted series, I guess you could say, called Hilarosity. Which is basically, as you describe, you take films that are so atrocious that they're hilarious. Hilarosity.
Correct.
Now, you've done reviews for, I'm going to forget some of these, but you just did one for Batman and Robin.
Mm-hmm.
You've done one for The Room. You've done one for Steel. You've done one for the Mortal Kombat sequel, the Annihilation, if I'm not mistaken.
You got it. Yep.
I never saw those movies.
You're probably smarter than I am for not doing that, yeah.
Okay, then I'll take that advice. Now, considering that it's a very different style of videos than you do, instead of just, you know, the sit down and review the latest film you just saw, what goes into picking the film? Like, when you see a movie that you think is so hilariously off, you know, hilariously awful, it's like I gotta do a Hilarosity on this. What goes through your mind when you decide that? Are there any films like you have in your mind right now thinking of one? Like, what's the whole process behind that?
Well, first off, tomorrow, as in Sunday, we're filming this or recording this on Saturday. Sunday is Jaws the Revenge is going to be up. That's totally done. That'll be uploaded on Sunday.
Is that Michael Caine?
Yes, it is.
He has. Have you ever heard his quote about that film?
Yes, I have. It's amazing. I wish that I put it in my video, but I forgot to, where he says, he's like, I have not seen the film, but I saw the house it bought.
I love
very nice.
Like that from, they call that creator backlash, where somebody like publicly or, you know, in an interview disowns a project they did. Like Mark Wahlberg has like gone on record saying The Happening is the worst thing he's ever done. And this is the guy who used to be Marky Mark in the Funky Bunch. That's saying a lot.
Yes. A ruby, the size of a tangerine. Yeah. That's my Michael Caine impression. It's not good. So the way it is with me with those is it has to have certain things in it that are visually hilarious. Like, because I've started watching ones that I was like, I'll probably do that. And then I'm like, this just isn't enough. Or maybe it's bad in the wrong way. Like, I thought I was going to do Catwoman. And I started watching it. I bought the DVD. It was like $2.50. I bought it. I started watching it. And I was just like, this is honestly so bad that I can't even make fun of it. It's just, it's it's truly awful in a way that doesn't even allow me to laugh at it. It's just, it would just be me talking about how crappy it all is. And yeah. And that's not as entertaining. Like with Jaws the Revenge, I don't know how well you remember it or if you've seen it, but the shark roars like a lion in it at the end. And sharks
don't remember
sharks do not have vocal cords. They don't have lungs. Like these are things that I can talk about, you know? And, yeah. And basically what it is and a lot of them, I try to find ones that are maybe from my youth or ones that maybe I grew up with that are truly awful now. But and then there are newer ones too. Like, believe it or not, the room is only like 12 years old. It looks like it was filmed in 1982, but I mean, it was made.
Like
in...
The Room is, because I always have this. Because believe it or not, me and John are to date the only people to have ever reviewed the film on Blu-ray. Like wow. even Blu-ray.com has never done a review for it. And like, because I actually helped John get acquainted, I guess you could say. Because I remember him calling me one day on Skype going, hey man, how'd you get that Room Blu-ray? Oh, I talked to Tommy Wiseau and he sent a copy. Hey, can you help me with that? So I helped him with that, because like, you have you ever seen that video that Doug did when his review got taken down, called the Tommy Wiseau show thing?
No, I haven't.
Well, in that video he did, because the video got taken down for copyright. Unjustly, obviously. And what he was doing in the video was he kept talking to this guy called John at theroommovie.com to imply to send emails to that email address. So I remembered that going, I wonder if this John guy does press. So I emailed him and I go on record saying, I'm pretty sure John's not real and it's actually just a pseudonym for Tommy, because it's written in Tommy's like bad grammar and everything. I still have the email on file. I'll probably share it one of these days because I love telling the story. But they emailed me back saying, Tommy would like to talk to you. Okay, here's my email. No, he wants to talk to you on the phone. Okay. If nobody could ever say no to getting to talk to Tommy, I was so on the phone. And I don't know if you've ever met him or see a screening or whatever, but
no, I've never had the privilege.
Well, let me tell you, he is exactly as you'd expect. He's not as exaggerated, but he's still got that awkwardness and that thick accent. And
I believe it. I mean, I don't think he was playing a character in the room. I think
he insists he was, but like when he answered the phone, he goes, "Hello," and I'm going, "Seriously." He's really like that. And then you're like, hello? Oh, hi, Chris. Seriously,
What I need. That's what I need to know. I need a recording. I just need a recording of him saying, oh, hi, Chris. That's what I need.
Why you do this to me, Stockman?
Man.
He was, like, the hardest thing is because when I'm doing, like, shit like that, Rav, I have to be, I have to be professional. Like, hi, how are you, sir? And when it's time was so, it's so hard because you're trying so hard not to laugh.
Yeah.
He was saying this thing about, like, so what is it you want from me? I said, well, I do Blu-ray reviews. I wanted to. Exactly. Like, see, can you imagine my spot? Because I'm trying not to laugh, and he's talking to me like this.
What do you want from me? That's hilarious.
So what is it you want? And I say, well, I do Blu-ray reviews. John told me, you know, you were the best to talk to about that. I wanted to review the film on Blu-ray. He says, okay, well, I'll tell you what. I will send you a Blu-ray copy for you to review. You may keep it for as long as you want. You don't have to return it. And in my head, I'm thinking, that's kind of how this works, but okay, I'll let you have your moment. And this is one thing he says, I will not tell you how to make your videos because I am not that kind of a person. But if I could make a suggestion, if you could not be as harsh on the movie as a lot of people are, that would be appreciated. And to kind of be a dick, I said, so you don't want me to be like Doug Walker? And then he says, no.
Wow.
I've worked with Steve Bloom. I've worked with plenty of anime voice actors. To date, nothing has ever topped the phone conversation I had with Tago Wiseau. So,
it's like, pretty great.
Well, right? And speaking of that, because here's something I personally want to talk about, because I had seen your Toonami Retro Rewind video you did, which you kind of implied is a new series of videos you want to start doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually had told me on Facebook, for a lot of people who are listening and don't know who I am, I do reviews. I did a review of Cowboy Bebop where I had the voice of Spike Spiegel, or for other people who never saw Bebop, what's wrong with you? He was the voice of Tom on Toonami, the host of the programming block. And Stockman, like myself, also acquired Steve Bloom to make a quick cameo in his video, and he had told me that he actually was inspired by said video to do that, which, first of all, I'm honored that my silly little video could inspire you.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that, I never would have assumed that someone of his caliber would want to work with a YouTuber. And when I was like, okay, so he's cool, you know, he likes to work with other YouTubers. And I was like, screw it, I'll try to contact him. And so if I hadn't have seen your video and heard of that, then I never would have tried.
Well, see, that's great to know, because I spent a lot of money and a lot of time on that video, because you did a review where you talked about the retail release. I like Cowboy Bebop a little too much, because I bought every release of the...
See, I wish I would have... I kind of want the Amazon exclusive. It's just... It's not...
It's expensive now.
It's expensive, man. It's really expensive.
When I bought it, because I had pre-ordered the Funimation one, which was the one in the record-style packaging.
Sure.
And the Amazon one, as soon as I got my check... It had gone out of stock. It was like, oh, shit. So I had to spend about $190 on eBay to get that thing.
Wow.
But you know what? Worth it, because the art books in there are awesome.
Like, I will definitely get it at some point. It's just kind of like, I'm kind of waiting for it to get more like to 100, and then I'll probably splurge for it.
I've seen it go to 100 sometimes, but you know, it happens. Like, you know, always check eBay. That's the best place. But it's a great set. But yeah, Steve was a dream of mine too, because I think, like you, you know, he's a god. Like, a man with that voice and that talent, it's sort of an honor to work with him.
Like, he's such a humble guy, too, and that's one of the things that I loved. Like, I read, like, on his Facebook, he if you send him something that you want him to autograph, mm-hmm. and enclose an envelope self-addressed for yourself, he will... do that for you. Like, he'll autograph it and send it back to you, and he doesn't charge any money. Like, William Shatner charges absorbent amounts of money just for an autograph at a convention where he has to sit on a chair, and you go and you actually go up to him.
He believes because he's William Shatner.
Well, of course, but it's like, dude, come on. These are people who basically supported you and made you who you are, your fans, and you're charging them for you to sign your name. It's like, I sign my name on receipts.
There's those, like, for some of them, when they're at conventions, the price, and it's always, like, minimal, when it's like, if it's an anime voice actor, it's like maybe $10 or $20, and that's only so they can cover their own hotel fees.
That's understandable.
That
but when
makes
you're,
sense, but
when you're
like
William Shatner,
90, it's like, whoa. Like, what, do you have, like, a diamond swimming pool in your hotel room or something? Because charging ridiculous amount. And, like, I've heard stories of people who have asked him on the streets, he, like, will either straight up refuse or ask for money, which is such a dick thing to do.
Yeah, but you know, the truth about the hotel thing is a lot of conventions put people up. Like, mm-hmm. they'll give you a hotel room that you don't have to pay for it. Like, a lot of the guests don't
expense pay for it. Especially if you're, like, William Shatner, and you're William Shatner, you're probably there for free.
Right, exactly. You didn't have to pay for a hotel.
Exactly. But bringing that up, because Steve Bloom is a very humble guy, wonderful person, and just extraordinarily talented. I remember because you had messaged me about that, to which I said, well, I guess I better check out that Retro Rerun. And I'd have to say, all honesty, it's my favorite video you've done.
It's my favorite video, too.
Well, see, because I watched it going, I'd like to see him do more things. Like I really like the style. It's got a pseudo-documentary-esque thing to it. It's got that believable nostalgia. Like, when you talk about the things you talk about in it, I believe it all. Like, it was like this part where you mentioned, you know, I had a friend who came over who was so excited to share his Pokemon cards. First of all, I was like, well,
right.
I relate to that.
Yeah,
I was, like, the right age when Pokemon was a big thing. Like, I was the exact target demographic, so I relate to that a lot.
You want to know the best... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, see, because my initial point is, like, will you actually continue that series? Are there other subjects you have in mind to do that?
Yeah, one of the ones I actually want to do is classic Nicktoons. I want to do one entirely about Nickelodeon in the 90s. I want to do one about children's books that I loved as a kid. Like, it would be all-encompassing of various books I loved as a kid. Because it's
like,
all about...
like Goosebumps and such.
Yeah, like that, and Shivers, and Eerie Indiana, and those books. I would do one about Nintendo 64, GameCube, early PlayStation, maybe. It's literally my excuse to just be 100% biased about something I loved as a kid.
Be nostalgic, be nerdy, yeah, all that good stuff.
And I got no problem admitting that. I mean, these are going to be things that I'm like, this is what I grew up with, this is what it meant to me, and this is how it shaped me as a person. And if you want to watch it, that's cool. Yeah. So, and, you know, things like that. Or the biggest one I'm actually doing, my next one more than likely, is going to be about video rental stores. Mm-hmm. And there are a handful of Blockbusters that are still open in the United States.
Really?
Yes, there's about 20 of them. They're independent.
I better find one.
Yeah, they're independently owned and operated. But they're allowed to keep the Blockbuster names. They pay like a certain fee. Now, a few of them are in Indiana. So I'm actually going to like kind of announce this. Now, this isn't 100% official yet, but we're still trying to work it out. But more than likely in April, John and I are going to actually do like a road trip to a couple of the Blockbusters that are within a few hours of his house. And we're going to take GoPros and kind of like actually go inside, and I'm going to ask if my Blockbuster membership card is still good. You know, I also found a Hollywood Video that is not open, but the bones of it are all there. The signs are there, the pictures. You can even look inside and see the posters of everything on the wall. And I actually already filmed there. So
like torture to look at that, like, oh, I can't even go in and get those.
You know, even the Game Crazy sign was still up, and I filmed all that. So it'll be, and the current chain, I don't know if you have these where you live, but the current chain that's still around is actually Family Video, and
I think we actually have one around here.
Great.
I know I've passed that name.
There's tons of them on the East Coast. And I have like, literally six or seven nearby my house within 20 minutes. And I was talking to the district manager about filming inside of it and permission. I was like, look, it's literally free promotion for you. And he seemed happy about it. So I'm hoping that'll probably be my next retro rewind. And my goal with it is to basically show younger kids of today's generation what it was like for people like you and I growing up, where we could actually go into a store, physically pick up a case, read like the critic's quote on it and see like, what does this look like? Instead of nowadays where it's like, you start playing it on Netflix. Oh, I don't like this. I'll turn it off, you know, and that's fine. I have Netflix. I like Netflix, but I like the idea of actually physically going into a store, being surrounded by old classic movies. And some of those aren't on Netflix, you know, like you can find like random obscure DVDs from the 70s, like it's at Family Video. And so that's going to be my next retro rewind, more than likely.
Well, I mean, like a lot of people take things like Redbox and Netflix for granted. Like would people like, I know there are people out there that like refuse to, cause you and I kind of have the same sort of collecting problems, cause I have a pretty decent Blu-ray collection nowadays. I think you're getting close to my number nowadays. But like a lot of people forget, first of all, I'm a big fan of physical media. I don't do digital copy. I do have a Netflix account, but you know, not everything on Netflix is going to stay on Netflix.
Right.
You know, like that favorite movie that you just saw on Netflix, it's not going to be there for long. You know, they'll take it down, they'll put up another film, and then you have no movie to watch anymore, which is why I still believe that physical media will hopefully stay around. I don't want it to go the same route as Blockbuster Video, because my problem with that has always been, like, especially with the digital copy idea, what if your computer breaks? And mm-hmm. then you just lose that movie like if that happened, like I have like, you know, music ripped on my computer, but I still keep the CDs because I know, oh, if my computer crashes, well, there's my CD again that I can put right back on there.
Exactly. Have you ever seen Zoolander?
Oh, yes. I actually saw that like early this year for the first time.
Okay, yeah. So there's a scene at the end where Hansel takes a computer and I got 10 years worth of files in this computer that are going to bring you down. And he throws the computer and it shatters and he goes, where'd all the files go? And like that, I made a meme of that because I wrote on my Facebook, I was like, I'm running out of space. I don't know what to do with all these Blu-rays. They're everywhere. And some guy wrote, go to digital copies. And I was like, yeah, but I put that meme, where all the files go. And I was like, what if your computer crashes or your tablet breaks or something? and you know, like, that's a horrible thought. So yeah, and I gotta be honest, I think that, like, the fact that DVDs are still sold in stores and made new, even though we have Blu-ray and now 4K Blu-ray, I'm pretty sure that physical media will be a mainstay, because it's just one of those things where there's still too many people who like it and prefer it. I mean, you're not going to get somebody who's 65 who is going to look for a digital copy, more than likely. I'm sure there's some out there.
Like, knows how to do one. Like,
sure. Like, my dad, for instance, is 68 years old, and he loves his iTunes, but that's different. You know, I'm a collector like you. I like to have a Blu-ray, put it into my shelf in alphabetical order, and dust them off and look at them and take pictures of them and stuff like that.
We're starting to sound like Robin Williams in 1 hour photo.
Like, he just has a collection.
The Blu-rays.
Yeah. He just sits in front of him and watches The Simpsons all night.
But, like, I don't know. Like, with the DVD thing, like, because I think, because a lot of people like to believe that the people that converted to Blu-ray are, like, purists, and, like, they refuse DVD, and, you know, DVD is, like, some kind of curse that they shun or some shit. It's like, no, because, for example, we're never going to get Rocko's Modern Life on Blu-ray. It's a standard def show. That wouldn't
more
make
than
sense
likely,
to put it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Like, very few things can go, like, that's the thing about Blu-ray, is that it's a benefit for things like, you know, film. Like, when people say, why does an old film have to go on Blu-ray? Because it's HD doesn't mean shot on HD camera. HD is the resolution. Yeah, you know,
right.
When it's an old film, if they restore it properly, like Wizard of Oz, for example, it looks great on Blu-ray because they went back to the original negatives and did a new master. It's no different.
Absolutely.
Than, you know, it's no different than when you bought a DVD and said, like, you know, brand new remaster or something like that. It's the same thing. But with TV shows, like, that's where it becomes complicated, because not every show was shot with HD in mind. Like, you know,
right.
for example, Married with Children will never go to Blu-ray, but
sure,
we could probably see Scrubs on Blu-ray because that was shot on film. So, you know, there's things like that where it annoys me when a new thing, like a new show that's natively shot in HD, and they don't even bother putting it on Blu-ray. Like, the last few seasons of Louie and Modern Family, two shows that I love, don't have Blu-rays because Fox believes they're not selling very well, so they stop producing them altogether, which annoys me. Because, like, the DVDs are those, you know, those manufactured-on-demand things that they sell exclusively through their site.
Sure.
And what bothers me about this is, like, that's great, you don't think they're selling that well, but what about the people who were buying the Blu-rays? Can't you make a made-on-demand Blu-ray? Because that exists.
Sure.
We have, like, the Hudsucker Proxy, that Coen Brothers film. That's a made-on-demand Blu-ray. You can only buy it on Amazon. So that stuff annoys me. I don't have a, like, you and I don't think we have a problem with DVD, because you own some DVDs, I own some DVDs, but
yeah, I mean, like, if it's
option,
a,
we go with Blu-ray.
Oh yeah, I mean, if it's a TV show from the night, I have tons of TV shows from my youth that are all on DVD, like Beast Wars, Are You Afraid of the Dark, like I said, Rocko's, Ah Real Monsters, Angry Beavers, Doug, like all these things will more than likely not be on Blu-ray, but there are, like you said, shows from back in the day that were filmed on film, and so those will eventually have transfers, more than likely, if they're popular enough. Like, there is a Blu-ray of the X-Files in the works.
Yes,
it's not
about that.
There is no official release date yet, but I mean, and I'm sure that with the X-Files show, that they're more than likely going to 100% make it, they'll probably release the show. And when I get that, when that comes out, I'll grab it instantly, because that is something I would love to see in HD. So
I could see you and your wife being like a Mulder and Scully in like an opening sketch.
It's funny.
You have that Duchovny 5 o'clock shadow going. So
that's a compliment. That's a handsome man.
You know what? He is. A lot of people don't, you know, Californication, man. But yeah, I think that's really all there is. It's been fun chatting with everyone's favorite YouTube critic, Chris Stuckman, humble guy. Which brings up the last thing that I know a lot of people listening would really like to know and hear from you personally, is that a lot of people out there are either listening to this, or they're watching you, or they're watching me, or they're watching somebody, and they're inspired and they want to go out, they want to review movies, they want to do video reviews, they want to do what we're doing. What do you think would be the best advice to give a young mind who's considering venturing out into the YouTube film criticism world?
Well, there's a lot of things to take into consideration, and to keep it constrained, I would say don't force it. never, ever force inspiration. Never force yourself to do something of an art nature that you feel like, you know, oh, I have to do this because it's an obligation, or, oh, I have to do this because I, you know, other people are doing it and I want to. If you love the idea of talking about film or books or games or anime or music or anything like that on YouTube, then that's going to come easy to you. I think one of the biggest misconceptions that I constantly read is that how do I say this? It's a big misconception where people automatically assume that certain things come easy, like speaking well, which I'm not doing right now.
You're doing fine, trust me.
Speaking well, lighting your videos, using good editing techniques, learning about editing, because I can personally tell you that it has taken me many years to get to a point where I feel like my videos are edited well. Like, I can't actually go back and watch my videos from, like, even a year and a half ago without going, oh, the way I edited the photos and the way it looks, and, oh my God, I didn't even color correct it, and what was I thinking, and all that kind of stuff comes into my mind. And so, because now my longest process in any of my videos is minute little editing things, like little sound effects here and there, little cuts at the perfect moment, little bits of color correction, and I actually edit the audio quite a bit too, because I learned quite a bit about audio editing. I did this online course about it, and I did all that about a year ago, where I was like, screw it, I am going to really try hard to make my videos look and sound better. And I think that's something that you really also have to think about, and I'm sure that you, Chris, agree, is that there's a big technical side to making videos that a lot of people don't even think about, because a lot of people think, well, I have the personality, I have the talent, I have the know-how, I can do this. And then they pick up, like, you know, a webcam and it's crooked and there's a light behind them and they're washed out in the video and the sound is off from the way their mouth is moving, you know, and all those things detract from your passions. If you're passionate about making videos or whatever you're passionate about, then you really have to learn. Ooh, my dog just barked. Sorry. He's still barking too.
About that. I have three of them. So
yeah, I think my mom's here anyway. But yeah, if you're really passionate about what you want to do and learn about the technical side of it too, learn about how to physically make a video and how to make it sound and look good, because then your passion combined with your know-how of the technical side of it will make for something really entertaining, and you will get noticed.
Yeah.
If you make good content and you're a nice guy or girl, you'll get noticed. You will. And people will start to watch. Because I can personally tell you, a lot of people do ask me, hey, I have 16 subscribers. Why isn't it going anywhere? And I go to their channel and they seem like perfectly nice people, but the videos just don't, they just don't look or sound good.
Yeah.
You really have to work on making your videos look and sound as good as possible. And I can personally tell you that until you do that, you're not going to really find that audience. You have to see, I view all of the YouTube film reviewers or game reviewers as friendly competition. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, if I see that you, Chris, made a technical improvement on your videos that I have not yet made, I think I should do that. And not because I want to be better than you. It's because I want to be as good as I can be. And I think that people, if they look at what's out there and they look at the kind of content people are making, that they can then figure out how to create that type of content for themselves in regards to the way it sounds and looks through microphones and technology and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's great. And what I mean by healthy competition is a bunch of people who are passionate about something who in turn inspire each other to do better.
Well, I mean, like, considering, like you said, I inspired you with the inclusion of Steve Bloom. Clearly there's some friendly competition there, other than the fact that we have the same first name. But who knows, maybe the technical of having a puppet in my videos has inspired someone to go make a puppet that looks like them, because I'm just that insane. I don't know. I do.
All I'm saying is that people who are really good at what they want, that they do, and they really are passionate about it, they in turn will inspire other people to be just as good, if not better. And I mean that in like the best way ever. I don't mean it as like, you know, a legit competition. I just mean like, it's like
a race. Come
on. Yeah. Like it's like a, okay, this is like a basketball team or a football team. If one player steps up his game, it encourages the other players to step up their game. So when everyone is out there doing their best, and there's the other issue is that sometimes people do that and they do it in a rude way. They think, well, my content's better than that guy's. Why in the hell does he have more subscribers than me? Why the fuck does this guy have more attention than me when I make better content? That's a really unhealthy opinion to have, because then you're not worrying about your own content. You're focusing on someone else's. And that is what I fear when I see people do that, when I see people with that jealousy complex. And it's like, okay, look, if you want to make good content, make it. Don't worry about what someone else is doing, because I've constantly had that too. There's tons of people with more subscribers than me. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's a number. What matters is if you're having fun, if you're passionate about what you're doing, if you're inspiring other people too, that's great. Who cares? Make your content and enjoy yourself.
I think that's some very sound advice, and I really can't find a problem. I agree 100%.
Thank you.
I will say it was a fantastic time talking to Chris Stuckman, basically, as many would like to say, the new Roger Ebert of YouTube or whatever.
That is not true.
I've heard that, though.
not true at all, but thank you very much. Roger Ebert was more than a film critic. He was a humanitarian. He was a philanthropist. He was a father, you know, and these are things that I am not yet. But as a film critic, that's a great compliment. Thank you so much.
There you go. So everyone listening, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Fish on Internet Radio. If you somehow have never heard of him, go check out Chris Stuckman's channel. The link will be in the description. And if you're coming from Stuckman's channel and you've never heard of me, well, I don't make as good of a video as Stuckman, but hopefully I'm just as entertaining, and you can subscribe to me as well. Hope you all have a wonderful day, and see you all next time.